Hey, everybody, welcome back to My Wave Podcast. Super excited to have you joining us on this episode. We've got a special guest, kind of last minute, young man by the name of Gibbs Kramer. Can't wait to hear his story. I've only surfed with him a couple times, and so I really don't know a lot about him. So I'm looking forward to diving in and finding out who he is, where he's been, and his surf adventure, and to hear his wave. But before we get into his interview, I do want to give a shout out to Billy behind the scenes, Thorpe Creative. You can follow him at Thorpe Creative on Instagram. He's doing a great job. Also, if you like what you hear and you'd like to support this, you'd like to contribute somehow, you can buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/mywave and you can buy me a virtual cup of coffee. You ever heard of that, Gibbs? Ever heard of buy me a coffee?
I have.
Yeah. So $5 if you want to buy me 20 coffees, $100, and much appreciated for your support. Also, today's sponsor for this podcast is Shredder Surf Camp. Shredder Surf Camp's at Wrightsville Beach and offering 4-day lessons, private lessons, small group lessons. Check them out this summer, shreddersurf.com. So Gibbs, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here.
It's super stoked. It's kind of last minute. I had a gentleman, which I was really looking forward to talking to this guy. I know him a little bit, but he's an older gentleman, grew up in California. And so he's got this knowledge, this database of knowledge. You just talk about a spot and he'll just go to town. I mean, that could end up being an hour and a half interview.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm super excited to hear. In fact, I called him today to see if he needed instructions to get here or whatever, or directions, and his voicemail, it went straight to voicemail. He goes, "Hey, this is Bob. I'm either surfing or playing golf, so just leave me a message." I was like, yeah.
Legend.
That is nice. Yeah. So Gibbs, welcome to the show. What are we going to hear from you about? Where was this wave, this session? I think you had mentioned a session or two that you wanted to talk about, but let's start with where was it?
Yeah, so the first session was in 2014. It was in Wilmington, or it was Wrightsville Beach.
Okay.
And is where I grew up.
Yeah.
Access 4. And my second session was in Nicaragua.
Ooh, okay. So we get to hear two separate sessions.
Yes.
Now, you say you grew up Wrightsville Beach, actually live on the beach?
Correct.
Okay.
I lived on Wrightsville Beach my whole life.
Wow, cool.
Access 5.
Yeah, so Access 4 is the L-shaped lot. Access 5 is back in a neighborhood, kind of.
Correct.
And that's the end of the street parking.
Correct.
For Wrightsville Beach.
Yeah, that's the last. After that, there's just lots.
Yeah.
Lots.
So. Yeah, the L-shaped lot, yeah. Number 4, and then number 3, and then 2, and then 1 is just a roundabout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a band called The L-Shaped Lot.
I know it. I was actually just listening to a little EP that Surfers Healing put out.
Oh, really?
And it's got a song with L-Shaped Lot.
That's cool.
I don't know which song it is. I just got it at Hot Wax a little while ago.
That's awesome. I love Hot Wax.
Yeah. Yeah. Good people over there.
It's the only place I go.
Is it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you sponsored by them?
No, I wish. I just, they hooked me up.
Good.
I mean, with WBLA and then just, I've been going there forever to get my school clothes.
Yeah.
And so I just go get all my shirts there and
right on.
Buy shorts.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. I realized today that I don't have any other shorts other than board shorts.
That's not a problem.
It's not, but I was
it's making you nervous?
No. But you go into a setting and maybe you need to. Maybe shorts are okay with a collared shirt, but
yeah, like a wedding.
You can't do it. Well, I got to dress up for those. But, I was like, okay, I got to swing by Plato's Closet. That's my sponsor.
Hey, I'll let you in on a secret.
Yeah?
Costco.
Really?
Yeah, it's where I get almost all my shorts.
Nice.
Because they're the fabric-y ones I have on right now that are just similar to board shorts, but they have pockets.
Okay.
Or they're... they have really nice pants, work pants kind of style.
Uh-huh.
And that's just what I wear, and it just feels really comfortable. And
all right.
I love them. They're $15.
I don't have a membership, so I'll have to sneak in with somebody one day.
I got you.
That works. So Gibbs, grew up at Wrightsville Beach. Were you, thrown in the water as a baby and given a board, or when did you learn to surf?
Yeah, pretty much pretty much DIY as you can get in terms of learning. Mm-hmm. For the first part, my parents put me in the water as early as they could because that's why they moved here. And
yeah,
they're both from St. Louis. So when they got here, they were pretty stoked. And that's what I did for like probably until I was 4 or 5. I just would boogie board or all that kind of thing.
Right.
And then I just started trying to stand up on my boogie board. And my parents were like, well, we should probably get them a lesson or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Once I was like 8 or 9, mm-hmm. I went to Indojax first.
Right, which they're like just down the beach a little bit.
Right, yeah, they're at Axis 10. I worked mm-hmm. for them for a long time too.
Did you?
But yeah, I worked for them from like 2013 or 14 to uh-huh. 2018, so like right. almost 5 years.
Yeah.
That was sick. But there was an age requirement. I think it was like 7 or 8 back then. Now there's not one, I don't think. But back then it was, I think, 7 or 8, so I had to wait until then. So, I mean, even before that, I was still just trying to surf. But yeah, that was kind of just how it happened, just as often as I could,
yeah.
whenever I could, rain or shine.
So as a little kid, you know, boogie boarding and trying to like learn, were you watching the older kids like as they paddled out past you or, you know, because I know like when I first started really considering surfing, I was boogie boarding and I remember borrowing a nicer boogie mm-hmm. and like, it was a game changer. And mm-hmm. to be able to ride a wave and then go up and come back down, I was like, that's what like right, sucked right. me in to want to become a surfer.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to remember because my memory is like not that great of that time.
Yeah.
But I've always been like monkey see, monkey do. And mm-hmm. I'll watch people do something and just be like, whoa, that looks really cool. Mm. I'm gonna suck at that and then I'll get better at it and whatnot. So
right.
My parents had friends, like a supper group kind of thing, when mm-hmm. one of them surfed, and we would all hang out on the beach like one weeknight, and yeah. he would surf, and I would kind of watch. I remember that, and I just kind of just tried to pick it up like that and learning how to pop up and
mm-hmm.
all the stuff not to do and really just try to muscle memory and mm-hmm. mirror image people.
Yeah, yeah. So then by the time you got to go to Indojax as a camper, were you already surfing or?
Yes, I was already. So, but between the time of like probably 5 or 6 and 10,
mm-hmm.
I got a board from my dad's friend. We call Meemaw, Elizabeth Floyd. She had a son that tried to surf. And back then, for that guy trying to surf, it was back in like the 90s.
Okay.
So it was this big, thick, old foam, like thick foam core.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the brand, but it was totally like 90s style. It had glassed in fins, like yes. the sharpest thing I've ever seen. And so that was my first attempt at trying to surf on a real board. My dad legitimately put caulking on the inside of the fins, like the curve, so that I wouldn't cut me because they were freaking sharp. And I was always nervous about that, but that was my first board. And then I got an NSP 7.2. I saw it in a magazine, and I was just, like, obsessed for some reason.
Really?
Even though they're horrible for my life now. But back
they take
then,
a beating, though.
Oh, dude, they do.
Yeah.
Like, we had that thing forever, and I would drop it on the concrete, and hit it on pilings, and fall in the garage. And
yeah.
It was
yeah.
awesome.
So Gibbs, part of what we want to do in the podcast is educate mm-hmm. people that may be listening first time, you know, picking up the podcast or wanting to learn to surf. And so you mentioned glassed in fins, you mentioned NSP.
Right.
And so let's try and maybe define some of those
okay.
before we jump you. Into these two sessions.
Yeah, my bad. I remember you talking about that and the other ones I had listened to with you. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't forget that. But I totally just forgot. So I'm sorry.
No. That's
so,
fine.
glassed in fins. So the board style back then for short boards was really aggressive, tight rails. And the rails are the edges of the board
mm-hmm.
And glassed in fins essentially are, well, nowadays you have fins by themselves and you can put them into a fin box, right? So it's just a little slot. You put them in, there's a fin key that you just turn. It's like a little Allen key. And back then there were certain types of fins that you would, that were just glassed in. So the epoxy or the fiberglass that was used to glass the board was also used to make fin molds. And so instead of having to put fins on, you had three fins or two fins. Didn't really matter, but you had three fins that would never move. They were glassed in. If they broke, they broke, and you'd probably need to get a new board. But it was a much more fixed style fin, and it was really just like you hardly ever see it anymore, just because it's so easy to, for people to break.
And right.
I think of it as more of like a advanced thing to get. Like you wouldn't want to get that if you're beginning at surfing.
Right.
And along with the NSP thing, NSP, I think, means new surf product.
Okay.
I believe that's the definition of, or that's what it means. And it's just a brand, and they make boards that are not, they're not epoxy, and they're not fiberglass, I believe. They are a different synthetic material that is pretty much indestructible. Mm-hmm. Like, you have this blank, and then you paint it. They paint it however they want to paint it. And then that's it. Right. Like you can throw it off your second story and the paint will chip and then you'll just see the bottom of it. And right. I don't really know what it's made of, but an NSP is pretty much an indestructible beginner style board. Mm-hmm. And I had a 7.2, which is considered a fun board. That's like the 6.0 to 8 foot range board. And then 9.0 up is longboard essentially. And
yeah,
it was just a really fun beginner board. Really easy to use.
Yes, they are. They are. They're super floaty. A lot of float, so you're going to be sitting way up high.
Definitely.
And I think all that extra float lends to a little more like squirrely in the water.
Yeah, the one I had was a rounded pintail. So what that means is if you were to take the tail of the board and round it like an egg,
right,
and then pinch it at the bottom. So it had a rounded shape, but then a pinched tail at the very bottom. So it still had this maneuverability of a rounded pin, like a regular board, but it was a little more maneuverability because of that pinched tail. It didn't have as much of that board in the water, like a squash tail, which would just be like a square with round edges.
Right.
Kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot into the whole, I really want to get some shapers in here.
Yeah.
And pick should, their definitely.
Brain. The yeah, guy just, from Hot Wax.
From Hot Wag. Yeah. Somebody, and maybe multiple bodies, just to get their take and to educate us on that.
For sure.
But it's a lot of fun. How many boards do you have?
I currently have I have two short boards right now. One's like my main, one's my beater style short board. It's a little bit smaller. And I have a long board. I just got a Stuart Redline.
Okay.
And I love it. It's amazing. And so those are the current boards I have. We have like probably 12 boards in the house. Just like that's my personal quiver. And then we've obtained over the years like Costco boards, boards from Indojax that they're done with, a board that was, it's called a soft top, I think, but it's a style board that Surf Camp, WB Surf Camp used to use. Mm-hmm. It had a much harder bottom and like a thinner foam top.
Okay.
And it's like a 9.3 or 9.4. It's a big board. Oh, it's amazing. And it's the kind that has the floral pattern on the front third of the nose.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen those or soft tops, but I love that thing. I'll take it out when there's like nothing out. And so I think we have like at least 10 boards with my mom's boards, including.
Nice.
And then just extra boards.
Yeah. So. That's fun.
It is.
That can be kind of the addiction, too.
It is very much for my mom more than me. she was on this podcast previously, but we really had to rein her in because there was no space for anything. Like, we'd try to take the bikes out and there's like 6 boards in the way or whatever. And she'd be like, oh, I got one on the way.
Oh, no.
It's like, oh my gosh. Well, you got to let one of them go.
That's great. So let's go back. I think you said 2014, Wrightsville Beach.
Correct.
So what was brewing in the ocean?
So there was a legendary hurricane. It's probably not legendary, but it was a hurricane called Hurricane Cristobal in 2014. It was late August, early September, I think.
Yeah.
I was in school. I think it was my first year of high school.
Okay.
I think that was my first year of high school. And so back then, that spot was much less crowded, even though it's still not that crowded.
Mm-hmm.
Praise God. But we won't talk about that anymore. And so anyways, Hurricane Cristobal 2014, I was getting off of school. I knew there was a swell in the water. I knew there was a hurricane swell. That was kind of, that was on the newer end to me, tracking swells, understanding periods mm-hmm. and timing and mm-hmm. Direction and all that stuff.
Right.
And I knew.
What's your favorite app or website?
Back then, I was using Swell Info because it was legit.
Mm-hmm.
Swell Info is kind of kicked the bucket now, yeah. in my opinion. I use Magic Seaweed now, but I use NOAA
okay.
For buoy data.
Right.
I have a better understanding of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I use NOAA and I use a couple other buoy data forecasting.
Have you heard of Pinpoint yet? Pinpoint.com? Check it out.
Gotcha.
I'll send you a text with a link.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So you knew the swell was in the water.
I knew it was
electricity
coming.
Was in the air.
Yes.
There's a certain vibe that happens in surf culture wow. when East Coast.
Yeah.
When there's something coming up off of Africa and you're like, oh, their projected path is south of Puerto Rico into the Gulf. You're like, no.
Dude, it's like, it's the only thing I can think of in terms of like that rush.
Mm-hmm.
That could be equivalent to like a gambling addiction. You know what I mean? Like just the rush of you're a week out and Swell Info is saying it's going to be 10 to 15 and red. Mm. And then the next day it's like 6 to 8 in green
right.
or blue. It's like, oh my gosh, it's happening. You're yes. blowing it up. You're telling your buddies and it's so much fun. And then like that day gets there and you just feel it. Like there's power in the air. There's power in the water. You can see the feeder bands from the storm, that's mm-hmm. like however many miles out. It's usually clean, and if not, it's offshore, mm-hmm. which is amazing. And when I'm talking about wind, offshore would be west wind for the East Coast here.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's just everybody knows. Yeah. It's hard because everybody knows there's swell, so everybody has time to think like, oh, should I go to Mays? Should I go to South End? Like, should I go to the inlet? And just
right.
everybody gets planning and
yeah, or should I run down to CB or
right,
is
right.
it is Holden going to be better? Or, right. You know,
yeah, Atlantic Beach.
Yeah, some of the more south facing beaches.
Right, right. Yeah,
yeah, electric in the air, and people are already calling in sick.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. they're just going to skip school yeah. and skip work.
Yeah, and I think that day I think I got off early.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, but I had plenty of time to surf. Yeah. I know that.
That evening was good.
It was.
Okay.
And so do you want me to keep talking about the buildup or just go straight into it?
Build it up.
Okay, so I got home from school and I used to run like book it to the access to see and check. And because there were no, like the only cameras I think back then were Surf Checks
mm-hmm.
or South End Surf Shop's camera.
Right.
And then WB Live, I think.
I don't know when they started theirs, but they,
I don't remember.
Yeah.
And then there was like there was one that was like not Live Eat Surf because that's Tower 7, but mm-hmm. it was like a 3-word slogan that had a couple of different cameras somewhere.
Hmm.
But I can't remember.
It's not ringing a bell.
It's like Go Run Play or something like that.
Oh, really?
I don't remember. There was one that they had at South End, but it was South End. Anyways, I went out to check and I just saw like glass calm.
Ugh.
Nobody out.
Ugh.
Nobody out. I looked all the way up to the inlet. There were people at the inlet.
Uh-huh.
I looked all the way down to Mercer's. There were a couple people at Mercer's. But nobody out.
No way.
And as soon as I walked up, so my beach access is, it's kind of like as you're walking, you enter the beach access going to the beach. It kind of, it goes uphill a little bit, probably like 4 or 5 feet of elevation. And so you can't see the waves until mm-hmm. you get to the crest of
but you
the
can
beach.
Hear
walks. Correct.
On some,
yeah,
those,
you can hear.
Yeah.
And so I walked up, and then I walked up onto the dune to check it, and I just saw like perfection.
Yes.
It was just like a single set wave, a little bit to my left, just peeling left. And I'm goofy, so goofy footer has their left foot in the back, and their front side is a left facing or a left riding wave, I guess.
Right.
So that was what I was so amped for, and I bolted back to the house. I don't think what made it also so special is that we were still in like board shorts and a top. Mm-hmm. Like a top if you wanted to be like comfortable, or if like I used to wear them to keep myself from getting rashes because I really didn't like rash guards.
Right.
And so I got out there. Still nobody out. It was amazing.
Did you call any friends or just like?
No, I didn't have time. I didn't have time. There's no friends when it's like 2 hours of sunlight left.
Yeah.
Can't wait for them. I think all my buddies were also surfing somewhere else, like mm-hmm. probably had a connection to Mace or whatever.
Right.
But so I got out there, and the thing that's so special about this session, and it's not really just one wave, it's because like everything kind of clicked. Like sometimes you have those sessions where everything's just turning on and mm-hmm. everything's like you're firing on all cylinders, it feels yeah. like. And like it doesn't mean that you're like killing it.
Right.
It's just everything works. Like you don't eat it on your first wave. You don't eat it on most of your waves. And I just had an amazing session. Like every wave I would catch was a really big set wave. I didn't have anybody out there. There was mm-hmm. no drift really. Mm. It's interesting there. Access 5 kind of breaks like a big wave break when it's big,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to South End where it's real shallow and it's a long paddle out a lot of times. And so it's really fun because it's deep water.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot deeper. There's not a sandbar that you hit most oftentimes at high tide. And so it really breaks like a bigger wave, which is amazing for me because I love like powerful turns. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a big turn guy versus like I suck at airs. I'm not the best at getting barreled for sure. And I just love to do hard, big, hard cutbacks, snaps, and just powerful carves and
yeah.
stuff like that.
I like it.
So what was so special was the drops.
Okay.
It was one of those drops where you get that feeling in your gut.
Mm.
And so what that means is like when you're paddling into your wave, the wave is cresting, and depending on how big it is determines how long you're going to be riding down the face of the wave before you get to the bottom and turn
mm-hmm.
to do your bottom turn. And so the time between popping up and getting to the bottom of the wave felt so long.
Mm.
And it was just like this long, epic feeling of, oh my gosh, I'm still going down. I can't wait to bottom turn, but I don't want to rush it. And it was just like amazing. And it was like one of those GoPro photos too that you see of just somebody in a perfect barrel at sunset, and the sunset is just caught like right in right in the frame. And so there were so many waves I caught that were just like perfect lefts, and I would just bottom turn and set up for this beautiful wall of water uh-huh. with a beautiful background,
yes.
like beautiful clouds. Like it was all just amazing.
So I did surf Cristobal, and you know, just what you're painting, I think everybody listening to this podcast is like stopping what they're doing and closing their eyes, because we've all been there with mm-hmm. this just sweet drop, that feeling, not that you're free falling,
right,
but that you're just,
it's just like speed
connecting.
You have so much speed.
The speed, and then just placing that bottom turn and then setting into that line.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mind's
in those screenshots right now. Just like that's kind of how my brain works
mm-hmm.
for some reason. I don't remember. I remember screenshots of things almost like not out of body, like some
right.
weird spiritual thing, but out of body in the sense that I can see the whole frame. I can see me in the frame
right.
for some reason. And it's really cool because I think back to a lot of surfing moments and I feel like I can see myself performing in a different view
mm-hmm.
and I get to see the whole frame, like the wave, the sunset, and all like all the things that were just like clicking
yeah.
for the night. And
it was
awesome.
Fun. Did anybody join you on that session?
My mom might have been the only one.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is rare.
Right.
For Wrightsville Beach to have an empty lineup.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
I mean, 2014 it was more common, but it was amazing. I mean, there might have been like one other longboard guy that I knew that would always go,
mm-hmm.
but there really wasn't like it was
you
bizarre.
Weren't fighting and scratching.
No, there was no other pressure.
Yeah.
There was no other pressure.
Now you mentioned it used to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are, 2021. Here we are, a post-COVID world where surfing as a sport, as an industry, skyrocketed in people's minds.
Correct.
People were looking for stuff to do outside. Mm-hmm. And I know surf camps were overbooked last summer.
Right.
I talked with a guy that lives in California, and he was talking about sales of boards and sales of surfing equipment and everything. Yeah. Just I don't know what the statistic is, but
yeah, like month back ordered.
Yeah.
For every board.
Yeah. So other than let's remove COVID out of the equation. Let's say it didn't happen. I wish mm-hmm. it didn't. But what has been the driver to see that increase in surfing? What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny that you ask, because I did a project on this.
Oh, did you?
In my English class in college.
Okay.
They were telling us to write about something that really bothered you in your town and mm-hmm. figure out why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the explanation, I-40. I-40 came in late 90s, okay. maybe early 80s.
Okay.
I think. I'm definitely wrong. I'm definitely wrong. I think it was early 2000s.
I moved to Raleigh in 95.
Okay.
And 40 was there.
Okay. So maybe, I think it was late 80s then, I think.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure, but definitely correct me because I'm definitely wrong. But I-40, I looked at all these graphs. When I-40 opened up, after the first like 3 years of it being there,
yeah,
it grew, like the population of Wilmington doubled every year at least.
Wow.
It was like exponential growth.
Wow.
And obviously there's a lot of cool things here.
Mm-hmm.
And like compared to the North, there's mm-hmm. a lot of things that we have in North Carolina in general that they don't have. One of them being a high population mm-hmm. and room for growth mm-hmm. and cheap land, low income taxes, lower than income mm-hmm. income tax up there and all those types of things. So that's a really big, like, one of our neighbors two doors down is from New Jersey, and this is their second home, and mm-hmm. this is where they want to live, but they have to work up there, and so they commute and
oh, wow.
stuff like that time to time. But yeah, that's, I mean, one of the biggest things is I-40, but it's just the vibe here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I spoke about it this past Sunday at Surf Church. I spoke about community,
mm-hmm.
and that's like 90% of what it is. Like, the community along with the environment,
mm-hmm.
not many places where you have so many access points to water and dock space and land on the water other than Florida.
Right.
Like, I don't know many other places that A, have a port, B, the port's not massive, C, there's intercoastal realty all over the county, even
yeah.
not like, not including Pender and north and south of us.
Right.
But I mean, there's tons. Like, this place is a landmine
mm-hmm.
just waiting to go. I mean, it's kind of exploding right now.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, people are paying full price and above for houses closing mm-hmm. same day.
Oh, yeah.
All that crazy
Multiple
stuff.
Multiple offers, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this area has taken off.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to slow it down other than no more space.
I don't know. It makes me sad.
Yeah. Yeah, because as you grew up, you saw
yeah.
a quiet town change.
Right. Yeah. You know, definitely.
Let's get off.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't need the anti bad vibes.
That's right. That's right. But the vibe is on those days, just
immaculate.
You can feel it across the county.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's everybody is scoring
mm-hmm.
because the waves are so good.
Yeah.
And so, like, call up your homies after. It's like, yo, dude,
where were
it's
you?
Not, did you get barreled? It's how many barrel or like how many airs or whatever. It's just like, you had to have scored.
Yes. So people listening to this may be like, well, are you wishing for us to get hit by hurricanes? No.
No.
We want the hurricanes to come and just to cruise that coast.
Yeah, we didn't get hit by the hurricane.
Park out there.
Right.
And just pulse.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with the Gulf Stream and how active El Nino, La Nina,
mm-hmm.
those temperature inversions are and all that stuff it has to do with. So it's not like I'm begging for a heavy hurricane season. I'm
right.
I don't want a hurricane to hit us because I'm the first person to tell you boarding up sucks. Like, our garage just is emptied.
Yeah.
And so it all goes in my room for the most part because I'm on the first floor. So
oh boy.
There's a lot goes into it.
Yeah. So excuse me. Let's jump to your next session. Because you have two.
Correct.
You said Nicaragua. What year was that?
So Nicaragua, I believe, was 2016.
Okay.
I think. Yes. Yeah, it was 2016. And we were there in November. We were there during the election, like the first election for Donald Trump. And it was just like a landmark time to be there. It was just funny because like that was a funny timing to be there. And that's why I remember it partially. But it was Nicaragua. We were in Rancho Santana, which is it's like a resort style. Like it's a resort, but there's hundreds of different places to stay. I was with Indojax, actually. We were doing charity, a mission trip, because I was a instructor there, and I did instructing for like the regular camp. They had a regular camp in the mornings. And then in the evenings, sometimes they had charity camps for kids with any disability, physical, mental, blind, cancers, autism. Kids from Chernobyl would spend summers there, and they would do a week.
In Nicaragua?
For Indojax. Okay. Sorry. Okay. This was all with Indojax. But when we were in Nicaragua, we were helping with a woman that was starting
an orphanage, kind of
similar to that, but it wasn't like they lived there. She would pick them up, and I think it was called, I forget what it was called, never mind, so I'm not going to botch it, but she would pick them up after school, before school, whatever. She would take them down to the water. She would teach them to surf. She would teach them all about what it means to be a woman and how to really learn that feminine life from another woman that's older than them, because in that area of Nicaragua it was very abusive towards the little girls. There was definitely child abuse and trafficking and different stuff like that. So she was just like, let me take these children anywhere but where they're at.
That's awesome.
And so she did that, and we would help them. She just needed numbers. She had numbers and people that knew how to teach surfing, so we would just take them, and literally it wasn't even about the surfing. It was just can we get these kids to smile?
Yeah.
Like, can we teach them not all men are bad, because not everybody wants to hit them, and all that kind of stuff, that just daily trauma. So that was amazing. I'm so thankful to have those experiences with Indojax, because otherwise I would have never been able to reach out to people like that and do stuff like that. And that was an amazing part of it as well.
Yeah.
But you want me to talk about the wave and like the break?
Yeah, I mean, part of me wants to just say, hey, you know, listening, go check out Indojax's website. Look at the charities they do. Look at the specialty camps they run here as well as around the world.
Yeah, for sure.
Quality program.
I think their website is just indojax.com. They have normal camps for kids, and you can take private lessons if you're an adult. Like, I've taught people that are double, triple my age. they don't like to be instructed by a 15-year-old.
Right.
But they have tons of different volunteer opportunities. Even if you have some experience, if you want to volunteer with the disabled camps, you're always welcome. I know they're pretty booked this summer, I would imagine, with just everybody being out of the craziness of COVID. So
yeah,
check them out. They're an awesome organization. I really appreciate Jack Virel's owner, and everything his family and his company did for me and all my friends that have worked for him.
So. Yeah. Yeah, good folks, good fam.
Definitely.
Yeah, check them out. But let's talk about the wave then.
For sure.
In Nicaragua.
So we were in Nicaragua. I know you're familiar with Colorado's, right?
I've not surfed Nicaragua. I've been there. I've not surfed it. But
that is where Matt Beecham had his wave on this podcast, correct?
Yes, that is.
Yes. So Colorado's, and the place I had my experience was called Panga Drops, and it's all on the same beach strand, probably like a mile apart. So it was like it's a hefty walk. Like, not many people walked it. It's a black sand beach, and it was really hot. And so we were kind of in this, I would describe it as like a massive bay, sort of, where it was rocky outcroppings from the south. Then you had Colorado's, and then it kind of made like a very slight U shape.
Okay.
And then another big cliff, and Panga Drops was just south of the most northern cliff. I know it's confusing.
So it's like a bay.
It was like a bay.
Colorado's in the south.
Colorado's was in the south, and then it banks up and Panga Drops was in the north.
Okay.
In the northern part of that little bay
area. Is that a right?
It was a both.
Is it both? Okay.
Yes. So the waves. So Colorado's, this is what's amazing about this place. Colorado's, I'll explain that one as well, is a very shallow, they call it the pipeline of Nicaragua, I believe, just like how Puerto Escondido's Mexican pipeline and stuff like that. And so it barrels a lot. It's really hollow at most times in good swell. It's a beach break, which means it's just sand on the bottom. It's a really fun wave when it's turning on. Uh-huh. And when we were there, it wasn't that good. It was kind of crumbly, and it wasn't breaking like we were expecting. So it was kind of a bummer, but I mean, it was still an amazing trip. So you have that, and then like a mile away, you have Panga Drops, and it is truly a wave of its own. Mm. It is a really, really deep water wave, at least 20 feet after, you know, the paddle out. It's, I don't want to say a quarter mile because it's, that's definitely an overstatement, but somewhere close to a really long paddle out. And it was like, you know, when you're paddling out, you paddle over groupings of waves, right? So you paddle through like four or five waves to get out. This was like 11 or 12 or 13. Good. And so like you didn't have to paddle straight through, but paddling around was really far. And so it was kind of like, it wasn't a big deal, but these waves were way bigger. It was much more of a big wave break because it was deep water. It was also a granite slab break. So what that means is further out where it was actually breaking, there was slabs of granite, I'm assuming natural, that were deeper in the water. And this would cause, it would go from really deep water to significantly shallower water, meaning 40 to 20 feet probably, whatever, something not life-threatening. And it would make the waves stack up much taller. And they were just generally bigger by like 5 or 6 feet compared to Colorado's.
Wow.
And so with that, it was also a really long paddle out, and it was more remote than Colorado's. There weren't as many people that surfed it.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was amazing.
And this was with your Indojacks crew.
Correct.
So all of you paddled out. You're paddling out. Y'all are screaming and hollering because you're seeing what you're getting ready to get into.
Correct. And it was hard. It was hard to guess because it was so far out that it's like, that looks like a 5 or 6 foot wave. Uh-huh. And then you just paddled out after for like an hour. And then you get out there. It's like, oh, it's actually like 12 to 14 foot or something miraculous. And I mean, that's probably an overstatement, but it was significantly larger than the normal 4 to 5 foot, 6 to 8 foot wave.
Right.
Because of the way it just broke. And it also had an inside section. So it would break on the outside and then reform and make a much shallower, steeper wave, much more racy and stuff like that. So, excuse me. Get out there. It's magical. It was the whole week we got to surf there as many times as we wanted.
Oh, cool.
It was amazing. So
by the end of the week, you had it kind of dialed in.
Yeah, it was definitely an easy spot to dial in because you could see where the waves were breaking. And obviously the sets that came in were much bigger, and they would break. They would kind of break like similar to Jaws in a way where it would come from a different direction, like a different cardinal direction.
Right.
And so you'd totally get caught off guard by this swell that's coming from like 30 degrees to the left of you. And it's like, what the heck? Where did that come from?
Yeah, interesting.
So it was pretty bizarre. And that wouldn't happen often, but it was just amazing.
Yeah.
The power involved. And so pretty much the whole week we were just catching really fun waves and really good. And it was the same situation like Crystal Ball where I would just drop into these massive waves. And at the time I was surfing a Hypto Crypto and it was a
fun board.
Very fun board. It was a 5'9", I believe, which is small for me because I'm 5'10" ish. And it's a small board, but it is tapered in a way that it has a lot more float in the chest area. And then it's very thin in the tail. And that's what Craig Anderson's bigger wave board is, it was at the time, because it would allow all that paddle speed to get into the wave. But once you stand up, all that weight is on the back of the board, which is thinner, so you can still knife around and carve really hard and hold your edge. It was also a rounded pintail. Here's the trend. I like rounded pintails.
Yeah, I do too.
But I was riding that board, so I was just getting these waves that were way too big for me and way too big for the board and my skill set at that time. And so I would just drop in and chatter across the surface because I wasn't like slick calm all the time. So my board would just chatter. And I remember feeling so scared to even do a bottom turn because I felt like I was just going to blow out. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just, it was that similar feeling to crystal ball where you just have this beautiful backdrop of trees, massive cliff, all that stuff. The sunset's not there because it's on the West Coast, so that's different. But that big drop again, it was that big drop and that ability to just lock into a big bottom turn and just carve all over the face.
Yeah.
Like four or five carves. Just like nothing like here,
right?
Obviously, because every wave we get is, on average, 5 seconds
right?
Or something ridiculous.
A pump and a bottom turn, or a bottom turn, a quick pump, and maybe something off the lip before it closes out on you.
Exactly.
But no, that sounds like an epic wave.
Truly, it is.
And then to share it with a bunch of friends and to serve the community while you're there, it sounds like an awesome trip.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's just the whole trip in general was amazing in so many different ways and lots of learning experiences.
You've been elsewhere in the world to surf?
I have.
Yeah?
I've been to Nicaragua twice, both with Indojax. And I went the next year, 2017, I believe. And then I've been to Puerto Rico with my buddy Stone Tippett, my mom, and a couple of her friends.
Yeah.
That was 2015, maybe 2014.
I surfed with Stone last Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
For a tall guy.
So good.
So good.
So good in the pocket.
It's been trying to get him in here, but he works Tuesdays.
He does. He works at the mess hall.
I'm gonna have to talk to Billy about opening up on Monday night. Yeah, I got a bunch of people that can do it Monday, not Tuesday. Anyway.
Shout out mess hall. Stone works there. He is a grill master.
Yes. Mess hall is a good grub.
That is.
Yeah.
They got a Brits Donuts burger right now.
Heard
makes
about
my
it.
Mouth water.
Mm.
Anyways, I've been to Puerto Rico, Nicaragua, Costa Rica. And I think that's it. Other than a couple places here, I've been to Atlantic Beach. I've been to Frisco. I've been to the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
Frisco's in the Outer Banks, obviously, but it's like one of the most southern parts. Went there. I've been to the Outer Banks just once, surprisingly.
Really?
I just never committed the time because it's just been difficult for me.
But. I missed this last little swell from, I guess we had a system called Anna.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I heard about that.
I was going to go after church Sunday, ended up going out to eat with my family, and I looked at the time. It was even for being in southern North Carolina, to get to the Outer Banks is 4 hours.
It is a haul.
It is a haul.
Considering it's your own state.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, I didn't go. I should have. I would have still had about 2.5 hours of surf that evening, and it was still firing at Jeanette's Pier.
Yep. Yeah.
Should have, would have, could have.
Yeah. One of my friends from back in the day moved up there. Bo Rayner. He is phenomenal.
Yes.
Like, in every aspect of surfing. And he moved up there after a while just because he was getting tired of trying to surf here and just not getting what he needed, most likely. And he's freaking killing it up there.
Yes, he is.
Hunting everything just like Brett Barley.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Yep. It is fun. It is fun. Yep. Well, man, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Any last minute advice that you'd give to someone starting out?
If you're starting out, please, please, please take a lesson. If you can't take a lesson, you feel like you're too old, whatever, please, please, please learn surfing etiquette.
Oh, yes.
Learn the ins and outs of the sport because it's not just you rent a board from South End and go out there and do your best because that's how I've gotten my boards dinged from people just doing that, and it's really frustrating. But nobody is telling you not to go surf, but everybody will tell you do it the right way. Please do that. Be courteous. Be kind. If it's big, don't be a boogie boarder. if you're going to surf, surf. But wear your leash on the right foot.
There you go.
Don't drop in on people.
Good advice. Good advice. Maybe we need to do a whole podcast on etiquette.
I would agree.
Like, 100%. Just get two or three people in here and just brain dump on here are the top 10.
Definitely. You know,
things to consider as not just a new surfer. I mean,
everybody.
There's folks out there that could learn less that need to be reminded that the waves is not all about them.
It's not.
Yeah. Sweet, man. Thank you for coming in last minute, sharing those stories.
No problem.
That was fun. It was fun to hear. Got my mind, like, literally crystal ball. I was there with you.
Right.
Yeah.
It was miraculous. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
It's an awesome experience.
Yes, sir. Now, I know you've listened to a couple podcasts, but had you ever heard about surfing in the Bible other than Jesus walking on the water?
Before your podcast? No.
No?
Definitely not. I was very startled by you saying that. And I always think about it after your podcast. I'm like, how could that be?
Yeah.
It's just crazy. But I mean, I believe it.
Yeah. Acts 27:44. They all made it safely to shore. Some on pieces of the ship and others on boards.
Heck yeah.
It's there. Hey, awesome. Man, thanks so much.
No problem.
All right, y'all. Looking forward to seeing you soon. Take care. Peace.